Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday report, we'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news here on the show today. And I'll start things off with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture Office of Farm to Fork announces it is seeking public comment for the 2023 Urban Agriculture Grant Program's request for applications. The RFA is now open for public comment until 5 p.m. Pacific time on June 15th. The California Budget Act of 2021 included a $6.2 million one-time grant fund allocation for CDFA F2F to develop the Urban Agriculture Grant Program. The 2023 Urban Agriculture Grant Program funds competitive grants to programs and projects that enhance the viability of agriculture in urban areas across California. CDFA is setting aside up to 10% of awards for tribal governments and tribal-based nonprofit organizations. Applicants may only apply to one track of the two tracks available. The first track is the Systems Builder Community-Based Block Grant, and it provides funding to community-based organizations with grassroots involvement in urban and regional food systems planning. Funding is available to increase staff capacity for organizations to provide pass-through funds to urban agriculture stakeholders in their region. Pass-through funds will be subawards ranging from $5,000 to $60,000. Eligible CBOs will administer subawards to urban agriculture stakeholders in their region. At least one CBO within each agriculture region of California will receive an award, and at least one CBO with statewide reach will receive funding. Regions include Sacramento, the Bay Area, Fresno, Los Angeles, San Diego, and statewide. Track 2 is the Urban Agriculture Practitioner Grant that directly funds urban agriculture projects for Native American tribes, for-profit businesses, and nonprofit organizations that are led by or serve underserved communities located in urban areas. Expenditures related to infrastructure, equipment, supplies, technical assistance, workforce development, and community engagement are allowable. For more information on the Urban Agriculture Grant Program, log on to the CDFA website. Governor Gavin Newsom has awarded $16 million in grants to increase home ownership for farm workers in California. The grants will support five programs statewide to build or purchase homes for lower-income farm workers and advance programs that help farm workers become or remain homeowners through mortgage assistance. The Department of Housing and Community Development awarded the grants through the Joe Serna Jr. Housing Grant Program to advance homeownership development projects, self-help technical assistance projects, mortgage assistance programs, and programs for the acquisition of manufactured housing for agricultural workers. Half Moon Bay in San Mateo County received $5 million. In Fresno County, the California Center for Cooperative Development received $5 million. In Santa Maria, the People's Self-Help Housing Project received $4,004,000. In Watsonville, the Habitat for Humanity Monterey Bay Program received $1,202,500. In Kern, Madera, and Merced, self-help enterprises received $999,370. California's agricultural sector plays a key role in fighting the climate crisis. On one hand, agriculture emits approximately 8% of the state's total greenhouse gases. That percentage would be much higher if it accounted for emissions throughout the entire food and farming supply chain. On the other hand, climate change, drought, flooding, wildfires, and extreme temperatures also disrupts farming and food systems. To help reduce emissions and create a more resilient food system, Assemblymember Lori Wilson has introduced Assembly Bill 408, the Climate Resilient Farms Sustainable Healthy Food Access and Farm Worker Protection Bond Act of 2024. The Assembly passed AB 408, sending a clear message that funding for climate change must include investments in agricultural resilience. AB 408 proposes a robust funding package of incentives, technical assistance, market developments, and infrastructure to transform California's food and agricultural sector into one that helps to draw down carbon emissions, better withstand extreme weather events, protects farm workers, and increases access to healthy and sustainable grown food. The bill also acknowledges a history of divestment from disadvantaged communities, socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers, and tribal growers, and sets aside an unprecedented 50% of of the bill's funding for these groups. The bill includes funding for regenerative agriculture practices, including organic agriculture and agroforestry, affordable, community-based, and energy-efficient housing for essential farm worker families and communities, school kitchens, community gardens, and programs that help low-income eaters buy farm fresh food grown with climate-friendly practices, and regional food hubs, meat and other processing facilities, and small-scale commercial fishing infrastructure. The bill builds on a three-year campaign led by the California Food and Farm Resilience Coalition, which is a coalition of 17 groups that came together in 2021 to raise the profile of agriculture, to fight climate change, and to advocate for systems-level changes to the food and farming system. AB 408 was written with the input of grassroots and advocacy groups across the state, and because of the coalition's holistic approach to organizing and drafting language over the last 3 years, the campaign has garnered support from more than 100 organizations across California, according to Wilson. Near Easton and Fresno County, California, rapidly ripening cherry crops are showing off their deep red color. Tony Yasada, field operations manager for Rivermaid Brand, said this is the latest that they've picked ever. Normally they're picking at the end of April or the first few days of May. He did add, however, that it's a good crop, much better than the past 2 years. As soon as the cherries are harvested under the warm sun, they are taken to a packing shed and immediately cooled off with cold water. They go straight into a chiller hydro cooler, which is set at about 45 degrees. Rivermaid then sells its cherries locally around the U.S. and even exports them to China.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the only event of its kind taking place this summer. Join us on June 21st, 2023 in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event. The Crop Consultant Connect event will bring you and many of your independent crop consultant peers together. You'll also get access to virtual CE hours as an exclusive thank you for attending this event. Your registration includes breakfast, lunch, coffee, snacks, as well as a wealth of information you're able to glean from this experience. Please visit progressivecrop.com for more information. Join us on June 21st in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event.
Walnut husk fly is a serious pest that can cause significant damage to walnuts by infesting the husks of the developing nuts. The infested nuts may drop from the tree before they are fully developed, reducing the overall yield of the crop. Even if the nuts remain on the tree, they may be too damaged to be sold as whole nuts. Early season infestation by the walnut husk fly results in shriveled and darkened kernels and increases the potential for mold growth. The mid to late season infestation causes some direct damage to the kernel, but more importantly, feeding stains the shell, which reduces the in-shell marketable value. Within the orchard, husk fly may not damage the crop uniformly, which can be challenging in detecting the walnut husk fly population and damage. Heavy infestation generally occurs in the orchard's cool, shady, moist areas as flies favor that microenvironment. One burning question for this season, though, is whether or not the cool, wet winter created a more conducive environment for husk fly populations.
So far, I mean, we're first week of June, so still the temperature is not gone that high. So if we all put together these information, then we can get a sense that probably relatively cooler condition in the orchard we expect this year. So in general term, that might promote the walnut husk fly activity. It doesn't mean that we have generated the data and then we definitely know about it, but it's general sense. These flies are thrive better on these kind of environment. And whenever there is a chances for that kind of environment in the orchard, that is likely that, that can increase the walnut husk fly presence or activity in the orchard.
That was UCCE IPM advisor Jalendra Rajal. Some walnut growers with husk fly in their orchards may be concerned about the cost of managing yet another pest in their orchard, but low volume insecticide applications can still be effective while also being quite cost efficient.
In this case, we're not talking about reducing the amount of active ingredient per basis. It's more about reducing the cost of application by increasing the speed of the sprayer or the tractor speed And then also we're going alternate row. So in that case, we're not doing the full coverage. So in this case, both ways, we'll be able to reduce the amount of the time that needed in order to complete the application. So it has two implications. One is reduce the application timing. So that is related to cost. The other thing could be that if someone has, multiple warts that they need to go through very quickly, the walnut huskfly, it's already emerged. In that case, these methods might be much more efficient in time wise too. So those are the two aspects of things we're looking at and here. So this is the work done with by entomologists, some of the entomologists in the within the UC system, University of California system, looked at a couple of years ago. It's actually the project funded through the California Walnut Board. And they looked at the multiple orchard and trying to compare this high concentration, low volume application with the regular sort of grower standard, which is full coverage, full speed, or full volume application of this product. So they're comparing this tractor speed 4 to 8 miles per hour instead of regular 2 miles per hour. And of course, the high concentration of the product, and with the full volume, which is 100 to 125 gallon per acre total water volume, and then doing the full coverage of the entire orchard. So when they compare these two methods with, they found that there's not significant difference between the walnut huskfly damage at the end of the season. When they apply these insecticide using these two methods. I want to add a little bit more on this low volume high concentration application type. So they are still using the same the sprayer, but shutting down all the nozzles except the two. And these two nozzles were basically directed towards up in the tree, and so that these two nozzles basically shoot the toxicant up in the tree. And again, these are also alternate rows, so they're basically going into one row and skipping the other one, and then going to the third one like that. So in that case, it's an efficient way. And of course, the reason for this is that all the insecticide product that we use for the walnut huskfly, it goes with the bait in it. So as long as we have the bait on the concent on with the insecticide, when you apply effectively, the walnut huskfly is basically attracted to that bait and get that toxicant. So in that case, full coverage may not be needed. One caution is that if the grower has really, really huge, heavy population of the walnut huskfly, in that case, we might need to reconsider this and maybe need to do the full spray program. But moderate to low level of population, it seems to be working equal to what grower standard is, which is, full volume application and lower tractor speed.
Rajal also noted some new and exciting work happening in the huskfly management space involving testing of a novel biocontrol method where fungi spread on the soil attach themselves to and kill huskfly larvae that fall from the tree after they hatch.
We found that these entomopathogenic nematode and fungus can be utilized, maybe potentially utilized in order to reduce the walnut huskfly population in walnut orchard. A little bit of background on walnut huskfly. So far, we don't have any effective biocontrol in the orchard that we can rely on in order to manage walnut huskfly. So there is no natural enemies. Effective natural enemies, I would say. There are some natural enemies, of course, present in the walnut orchard, but they are not significant in terms of reducing the population or controlling walnut huskfly. So in that case, only way that we control walnut huskfly is using the insecticide approach. In the summertime, basically targeting these the flies that are flying in the orchard. And this period is longer, like 2 months or so. And basically just kind of like constantly applying the insecticide in order to kill these flies. So the idea that I had, and this is a project that I'm working with the California Walnut Board, is that if we can use these biocontrol method, and at least if these biocontrol method will help to reduce the population to a certain degree, then that would be much more effective. So that was the sort of idea behind it. So what we did was, as you mentioned, walnut husk fly, when they feed on the husk on the tree, these larvae, just these mature larvae from the husk, they just drop on the ground and go into the soil in order to pupate. So the idea is that if we apply something, these kind of beneficial nematode or fungi in the soil, and these larvae drop in the soil, at that time, they'll pick up these entomopathogens. And in the process, they kill them when they are, before they're pupating in the soil. And so with that approach, we use entomopathic nematode, the two species that we combine and use it, and look at the mortality of the walnut husk fly in the lab. So we basically collected the walnut husk fly from the infested orchard, bring it to the lab, and expose them to these fungi as well as nematode. And that's where we see the efficacy of these nematode as well as fungus against these walnut husk fly larvae in the lab basis. So next step we did after that point was we apply these into the field, directly into the field, in the soil, and basically collected the idea is that we applied in the fall, and the next summer when these adults emerge from the soil, the idea is that whether we see the reduced number of these adults or not, because we applied in the fall and these larvae are the one that's supposed to pupate and then come back in next year. And so when we looked at that, we see some promising results. We looked at the entomopathogenic fungi, Bouveria bassiana, and it had reduced the number of the adults that emerge from the soil when we use the entomopathogen compared to the untreated control. But still the work that we've done is not still the statistically not significant. We have seen the more emergence from the control compared to our entomopathogenic nematode plots, but statistically not significant. And this was the case in the one orchard. So we're continuing doing this in this year also. Plus also this year, we're planning to do, what if we apply these entomopathogens in the soil in the summer? The idea is that when the summer, when these adults emerge from the soil, instead of targeting the larva, we're targeting right now these freshly emerged adults in the soil. So it could be combination of things, fall application as well as a summer application might help to reduce the population, but we're still continuing to do this work. So it's kind of like, ongoing work. So I don't have clear 100% results yet, but what we have seen so far is promising.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
Congressman Tom Tiffany of Wisconsin has reintroduced the Guaranteeing Robust Agricultural Independence and Nutrition for America Act, otherwise known as the Grain Act. It would place a one-year moratorium on the enrollment of farmland in the Conservation Reserve Program, which pays farmers to leave land uncultivated. After the one-year moratorium, the bill would prevent prime farmland from getting enrolled in a CRP. Food security is national security, and America needs to be taking the necessary steps to shore up the food supply, according to Tiffany. He says they can only have a prosperous future if they allow their nation's farmers to unleash their full production potential. He also says the bill came out because the administration expands the CRP in a green fantasy attempting to achieve net zero emissions. Tiffany's Grain for America Act would not impact farmland that is already part of the CRP. Additionally, farmers who already have land in a CRP can re-enroll during a moratorium. The National Dairy Farmers Assuring Responsible Management Program Excellence Awards are back for a third year. The awards recognize farms and evaluators who demonstrate excellence in the farm program. Awards are given in four categories, including animal care and antibiotic stewardship, environmental stewardship, workforce development, and farm evaluator. They are so proud of the farms that participate in their program areas and are dedicated evaluators, according to Emily Stupp, Executive Director of the Farm Program. She says they believe it's important to publicly recognize the people that make the farm program so successful. Farms or farm evaluators can be nominated by fellow dairy farmers, community members, extension, cooperative, and processor staff, veterinarians, and themselves. Nominations are open through August 1st. Nominated farms must have a current farm program evaluation in the respective category area and must be in good standing with the program. Evaluators must be farm program certified. More information is available at nationaldairyfarm.com. USA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has a story on how FY 2023 agricultural exports will compare to agricultural imports.
The U.S. this fiscal year is in the process of importing more agricultural products in terms of dollar values than it is likely to export. This from this week's new USDA trade forecast.
We're looking at a trade gap of about $17 billion in terms of imports over exports.
USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says the forecast calls for U.S. ag exports this year to be $181 billion. Imports could hit $198 billion.
A big chunk of this is going to be in horticultural products.
About a third of our imports are in that category, $99 billion worth of things like fresh vegetables and fruit products in the winter when they may not be produced here in the U.S.
And the dollar is strong and makes it able for consumers in the U.S. to be able to afford those counter-seasonal or products may be different than they can get from the domestic market.
This year's ag trade deficit would be the first since 2020. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The National FFA organization named Corey Florney as the executive in residence for equity, diversity, and inclusion. In the new role, Florney will guide the leadership team and national boards in EDI matters. He'll design, implement, and evaluate an EDI strategy that aligns with the organization's strategic plan. They are excited to have Corey as part of their team in this role, according to Chief Executive Officer of the National FFA organization, Scott Stump. He says they want to ensure their current and future members feel welcomed, and FFA is indeed a place for all to feel valued and contribute to their mission. Corey is the right person to help them achieve that goal. Florney is a former FFA member and the first African-American FFA president. He brings over 30 years of experience and leadership in diversity and inclusion programming. His overall goal is to help them rethink how they talk about and approach EDI, according to Florney. Environmental groups have asked the federal court to force the Environmental Protection Agency to close what they say is a loophole in agency regulation that allows seed treated with pesticides to go unregulated. The lawsuit was filed in a U.S. District Court for the District of Northern California. The Center for Food Safety and Pesticide Action Network North America asked the court to declare that the EPA is in violation of the Administrative Procedure Act when it declared seeds coated with pesticides as treated articles exempted from the same regulations required of pesticides. The EPA in September of 2022 rejected a 2017 petition filed by the groups asking the agency to regulate coated seeds. That was done after the court order. The groups outline in a lawsuit how they believe EPA is mistaken in its classification of pesticide-coated seeds. EPA rests this petition denial on the claims that not only are the seed and plant an article under the exception, but the seed and living plant are the exact same article. According to EPA, because a seed or the article treated becomes a living plant, protection beyond the seed itself and a presence of neonicotinoids in the living tissues of the whole plant does not negate the application of the TAE. Thus, for EPA's interpretation in the denial to make logical sense, it would have to equate the seed and the whole plant, as EPA has stated in numerous places that only articles treated for the sole protection of the article itself may be exempted under the TAE. EPA implemented regulations establishing treated article exemption in 1988. Seeds treated with neonicotinoids are at the center of environmental contamination being cleaned up by seed companies at a former ethanol plant in Meade, Nebraska.
AgroPlantae is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlantae formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlantae developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlantae, imagination, innovation, science in action.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.